Voluntary evacuation of the island of Guernsey. On the 18th of June 1940, the British government decided to demilitarise the Channel Islands, although it was not officially announced till 9 p.m. on June the 28th. All armed forces were therefore removed from the islands, and the local military disbanded. Then, on the 19th, the States of Guernsey decided to have all the school children evacuated to the mainland. Also, anyone who wished to go, they had to register their names at the nearest constable's office. Well, hundreds of people got panicky, and some believed a rumour that it was a compulsory evacuation, which of course was wrong, and they all rushed to the constable's office in St. Peterport to register their names. The town was crammed with people, dozens of which fainted. The next day, boats arrived from England to take the people away. Women and children had to go first. Parents had to say goodbye to their children, who were attending school, not knowing if they would ever see them again. Then men of military age had to go if they wanted to. Then anyone could go, regardless of age. People with cars rowed down to the boat, jumped out of the car and left it on the jetty. Some were sold for as little as £1. The same applied to motorbikes, cycles and prams. People went out of their minds. They just turned the key in their house or shop and left everything behind them, not knowing where they were going or when they were coming back. About 26,000 people left the island, just ran away as fast as they could. But how many gave a thought to the ones who couldn't get down to the boat? Cripples, invalids. This was where the helping hand of the St. John Ambulance Brigade came in. They removed over 50 cases to the boats. In some instances, they had gone into a house and found an old lady, an invalid, left alone to fare for herself. The rest of the family gone away and left her. For my part, I went up to the ambulance station on the 20th, as the evacuation lasted 3 days, and found that the men on permanent duty there had not slept properly for 3 nights. They were being besieged with incessant telephone calls, the bell ringing every minute of the day. They had to requisition the state sanatorium ambulance, as one of our 3 ambulances was in the garage being painted. Well, I thought I'd better do a little bit to help, so I went out on the number 2 ambulance and took 3 people to hospital. I did not have any to take to the boat that day, but on the 22nd I went on duty at the station again and removed 3 people to hospital and 1 to the evacuation boat. It was raining that afternoon, and it was very difficult getting this old lady down the slippery and steep gangway onto the boat, but we managed it all right and returned back to the ambulance station. This was the last day of the evacuation, and I think that the rain dampened the spirits of the would-be evacuees, as the White Rock was empty of people, and 3 large ships which were waiting outside the arbour, ready to come in and take people aboard, had to return to England empty. After 2 or 3 days, things began to quieten down a bit, but all work and trade was at a standstill, and you could notice the depleted population. Another page had been written in the history of Guernsey, and we were now an open town, defenceless, and waiting to see where the tides of fate would take us, little knowing what lay in the future of the island. But all decided to make the best of a bad job, and things did gradually begin to return to normal. Until Guernsey's first air raid. On June the 26th, enemy planes flew very high over the island and went away. And on the 27th, an enemy plane came over very high, and when no resistance was shown, it came lower, the markings on it being clearly visible to the naked eye. It must have taken some beautiful snapshots of the lorries loaded with tomatoes lined up 2 deep on the White Rock, awaiting shipment to England. Also photos of the gasworks, the electric works and the airport. It circled around a few times, then headed for home. It was a reconnaissance plane. We had just finished our tea the next day, the 28th, about 6:50 p.m, when I heard a plane. I went up into the garden and saw 3 planes which I identified as the enemy. Then, all of a sudden, rat-a-tat-a-tat, rat-a-tat, they had started machine-gunning. It was an air raid. I told my family to get down in the basement of our house. We all took our respirators and I put on my steel helmet. There we stayed. The raiders went away for a bit, then we heard the drone of their engines coming back. The air raid warnings were shrieking out their moanful note. Then it started. They were dropping their deadly cargo of bombs. The house shook to its foundations with the detonation. Again and again they dropped, the only resistance given to the raiders being the guns mounted on the ships in the arbour. These kept the planes up at a good height. Well, the planes left the town now and again, and went over the countryside where we could hear the rattle of machine guns in the distance. During one of these intervals I went up into the garden and saw dense smoke billowing up from the direction of the harbour, and guessed that they had hit the lorries on the White Rock. When I was fairly certain that the raiders were gone for good, I rushed upstairs and changed into my uniform, the uniform that I am proud to bear, that of the St. John Ambulance Brigade. When I dressed, put on my helmet and slung my respirator across my shoulders, I jumped on my cycle and rode as quick as I could to my first aid post, which is at the town arsenal, and there reported to our district officer, Mr. Deer. He gave me orders to proceed to the White Rock where my help would be required. I jumped in an air raid warden's car and we started off. The first thing we saw was the fire engine which had smashed into the side of a private car and practically flattened it out. The firemen had their work cut out trying to separate the two vehicles. We continued on down St. Julian's Avenue and at last reached the bottom. What a scene of devastation! Every window within a radius of half a mile of the White Rock had been blown out. The road was covered with fragments of glass, and the four faces of the Weybridge clock had been smashed, the hand still pointing to the fateful hour of 6:55, an hour that will go down in the annals of the island's history, and a memory that Guernsey people will carry with them to their graves. Well, to get back to my story, I spotted our number 3 ambulance and immediately got into it. Everything was in chaos. The produce lorries had been transferred into a line of fire, a blazing inferno, the heat being so terrific that I had to close up the window alongside of me. We got a little further along and were stopped by a local doctor, although an old man, we could see that he had been working hard, his shirt sleeves rolled up. It appeared that a man had been shot and had either jumped or had been blown over the wall onto the beach. We went down a steep iron ladder and found the man along with 4 other people who were taking shelter, as the all clear had not sounded yet. This man was obviously in a bad way, so we decided to get him to hospital as quickly as possible. He had to be carried up the ladder, but with the aid of straps under his shoulders, which were not injured, we got him up all right, and so proceeded to the country hospital. We passed a scene by St. James's Church that I will never forget. I think it was enough to make any of our St. John men cry. Our number 2 ambulance, the best one in the island, was against the curb, the back tyre flat, every bit of glass smashed, and the sides and back doors riddled with shrapnel and bullet holes. We could not stop, so carried on to the hospital where nurses and doctors were awaiting the arrival of casualties. We took our patient inside and then reported back to the ambulance station where we were told that there was a casualty at Vincent Bay. We went out there, but the patient had already been picked up by an auxiliary ambulance, so we therefore headed back for the station. Volunteers were called for to go and bring back the damaged ambulance if possible, so 3 other men and myself went down to College Street in a delivery van, where we found that several kindly old ladies had got busy with brooms and were sweeping the broken glass out of the driver's cab. I said before that every bit of glass had been smashed, but was wrong, because in the front of the ambulance, just above the windscreen, is a lamp which has the St. John Cross coloured in yellow on a black background. In the night time this lights up. Well, this lamp was not touched, although the windscreen was smashed. Neither were the 4 St. John transfers on the sides, although they were surrounded by machine gun bullets. This brings me to a point worth mentioning. A few days previous, our district officer, Mr. Deer, was giving us a little talk, and he mentioned that he had noticed that the St. John ambulance flag flying at the station was getting torn, but that the cross in the centre was intact. To quote his words, he said, "That cross will never be torn. You can think what you like." His words came true in more than one sense, because none of our men were killed in the raid, although several were in the thick of it. Only 2 were injured and had to be taken to hospital. We were now able to have a good look at the ambulance. Everything inside was upside down, blankets, pillows and first aid kit all over the floor. One patient had been killed as he lay on the stretcher. The 2 men on the ambulance had been forced to take shelter underneath because it was parked on the weighbridge. The attendant was severely injured, but the driver escaped without a scratch, which I think was very lucky as they were in the thick of it. We now tried to pump up the spare tyre, but were unable to, as we discovered later a bullet had entered the side door, gone through the attendant's seat and punctured it, so there was nothing else to do but to leave it for the time being, as it was getting very late. So I therefore went back to my first aid post, collected my cycle, and returned home to my family, who were anxiously waiting my return. I'm pleased to say I managed to sleep that night. 3 bombers swooped over the town, but they were British, 3 or 4 hours too late, but this gave us a bit of confidence, so we went peacefully to sleep, under the protection of the lion's wings. This concludes my story. I sincerely hope that Guernsey never experiences anything like this again. But if it should, one thing is certain. We as St. John Ambulance men will face it unflinchingly and with courage. ready to do our job again, always bearing in our minds the brigade's motto, "For faith and the good of humanity." Private D.R. Board, No. 8, Duke of Connaught's District, Guernsey Division.